Jen.
What's up, Jeffrey?
I have a secret.
Tell me.
I have captured Napoleon Hill's foundational wisdom for the 21st century.
Amazing. Let's share that with the diehards.
For a limited time, you can download the first chapter of my new book, Truthful Living, before it's released on Amazon. These easy-to-implement real-world strategies for life, family, business, and your bottom line prove as energizing and inspiring today as they were 100 years ago.
Go get the first chapter of Truthful Living for free.
For free.
It's the foundation of Napoleon Hill's self-help legacy. His long-lost original notes, letters, and lectures, now compiled, edited, and annotated for the modern reader. Go to hillsfirstwritings.com and get that chapter for free.
They wouldn't have mentioned them. They would have just pretended they didn't know them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of us do this the opposite, by the way. Most of us, like, LinkedIn stalk somebody and then try and work backwards and then beg someone we mutually have in common for an introduction. And that person probably doesn't want to introduce you.
Yeah, I noticed that you're a number one connection with Bob Smith.
I hate that.
Can you possibly introduce me? I go, fucking no, I'm not going to
introduce
you.
Even said hey to me. You just want to know if I can make an introduction?
Yeah.
Exactly. And we also don't know the strength of the relationship with you and Bob Smith, right?
Right. Yeah.
By the way, that has waned over the years.
Yeah, it's gone away.
You see less of that now.
Are you taking your shirt off or something? What's going on here?
I have my t-shirt on today. Just live in wonder.
All right.
It's not living
in
North Carolina.
For those of you who couldn't see the video, he was literally like unbuttoning his shirt.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
And welcome to Sell or Die, the premier, the best sales and personal development podcast on the planet. I'm Jen Gluckow, author and founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And you may notice, I'm the co-host of this podcast, you may notice that my co-host, Jeffrey Gittimer, is missing today. He is speechless.
So what happened to him?
Oh, man. Here's the story, guys. He's speechless. Literally, I have never seen Jeffrey speechless, and he is. He lost his voice. We were in Atlanta. He was about to give a performance to 150 or 200 or so people, and he lost his voice. But he powered through. He gave an amazing talk. I mean, it was really, really, the feedback from this one was amazing, and he definitely went out with a bang, and he powered through. And, you know, it really made me think about what do you do and what do I do if we're struggling with something? Like, you know, you're not feeling the best today, or you have a stomach ache and you're supposed to meet with a client, or whatever it may be. How do you power through and still give your best performance? Because the video will show. That was an amazing performance. And, you know, I really give him credit. If you guys were in Atlanta, you know what I'm talking about. His voice was struggling a little bit, but he was fully present and he delivered. So coming up today, we have an amazing guest. Our guest is David Berkus, the associate professor at Oral Roberts and the author of Friend of a Friend, Understanding the Hidden Networks That Can Transform Your Life and Your Career. David's here to help us deep dive into the science of networking. This is one of my favorite topics. But I know that networking might not be your favorite thing to do, so we're going to talk about it because networking is one of the biggest things that can help you grow and transform your business. David's going to talk about confidence in networking, and he's going to talk about new techniques that you can use that you may have never thought about before. But first, we're going to read, or not we, because Jeffrey's not here today. I'm going to read a 5-star review. Dollar Fun writes, "I wasn't sure what to expect when I first started listening, but I found myself listening every day. Each episode provides valuable insight from Jeffrey and Jennifer, as well as guests who provide informative and entertaining content. You learn something new in every episode. Thanks. Thank you, Dollar Fun, and what a fun name. I love it.
Sounds like, yeah, that's a really fun name.
Dollar Dollar. All right. Guys, I want to know if you have joined our Facebook group yet. We're really going to start pushing more stuff there, more private content just to you guys in that group, start doing more video lives right in there just to you guys. So if you listen to us every day and you're not yet in the Seller Diehard official Facebook group, come on, what are you waiting for? Join. We're going to ask you literally, like, I think it's two or three questions. We want your email address.
Yes, we want
to know your age range, so we know who we're talking to and we can provide you with the best content for you. And we want to know your biggest sales challenge. Those three things. That's the only barrier to entry, as long as you're a nice person. Like, we don't want assholes in there. But but just join Sell or Die Hard official group. You'll get prompted with three questions. Answer them. We'll let you in and you can join the online party. And the cool thing about that group is that you guys are creating your own community within it. Like, I see some diehards following other diehards and commenting on other diehard stuff, and I'm like, this is so cool. You're now connected through Sell or Die. Anyway. All right. On to our conversation with David. David took the time to read every single networking study. Literally. Every single networking study.
That sounds like a lot of time.
I know. He applied his own life experiences along with the studies, and he's going to bring a perspective to networking you may have never heard before. Take a listen.
Here we go. David Berkus is an associate professor at Oral Roberts and an expert in the science of networking, a great science. His TED Talks have been, have been seen or viewed over 1.8 million times. David is also a contributor to the Harvard Business Review and is the author of Friend of a Friend, Understanding the Hidden Networks That Can Transform Your Life and Your Career. Diehards, please say hello to the great David Berkus.
Thank you so much for having me on.
We are glad you're here.
Yeah, you're a college professor. I used to cut your class all the time.
Probably.
Well,
probably.
Actually, I didn't know if I cut it or not because I never really learned the names of my professors. So it could have been you.
You know, you would be surprised how often that happens to me, where a student will come up to me mid-semester and then be like, now, I wanted to send you an email, but I spelled your last name wrong. I'm thinking, like, I've been in the classroom with you for three times a week for like 9 weeks, and you still don't know how to spell my name to send me an email.
They
like,
might need a happens. Different class.
Well, he's, there's no accounting for the stupidity of the American student.
Oh, man. So how did you even get into networking?
Yeah, what's the science of networking anyway?
Oh, okay. So depending on how far we want to go back. So the short version of the story is I've written two prior books, one around the psychology of creativity, and then another around kind of these newer workplace practices, everything from unlimited vacation to salary transparency, the stuff that TED Talk was about. And in the process of doing all of that, I stumbled into this world of network science, the people who study who's connected to whom and why. There's probably about 60 years of research going back to, you probably heard the original like strength of weak ties studies and those things. But one of the things that I found that really kind of upset me was that most of the networking books that were out there were networking advice books. They were, here's how to introduce yourself and here's how to work this room. And the problem with advice is that it's autobiographical. It represents one person's idea of what you're supposed to do. So I started thinking, okay, there's got to be a way to blend all of these insights from the world of here's what's going on in the network, how a network like an industry works. And then once you figure out that, you can sculpt your own sort of advice on how you're supposed to actually work it.
That's pretty cool. Hmm. Would you say that the whole process of networking is kind of you learn as you go? Do most people take a course before they show up at a networking event, or do they just show up?
So, I mean, for a lot of us, it's just learn as you go. In fact, I would say most people, the entirety of the network is just grown organically. They thought to show up to an event, or maybe they didn't, and they're at a conference and you meet people sort of organically. Then you've got the intentional people that are seeking out those advices, reading a book about how to work the room, et cetera. But that they're probably in the minority. And then even more than that, you've got the people that are concerned with, you know, my job is to figure out how this whole industry network works. Instead of just running up the count of connections I have on LinkedIn, I want to know who among my clients are connected to whom, who I can play off each other, work referrals on, et cetera. The people that study a network at that level are very, very rare.
Isn't the thing like the six levels of separation, like you're never more than six calls away from Bill Gates or from Warren Buffett?
Yeah, six degrees of separation. Or yeah. for the movie nerds, it's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. But believe it or not, it's a proven phenomenon. It's a study that goes back about 40 years. What I think is really interesting isn't that we're all, as 7.4 billion people on the planet, 5 or 6 introductions away. It's that if that's true, then there are hundreds of millions of potential introductions one person away, which especially for a salesperson, that's what matters, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to shake six hands to get to somebody. You want to know who is one introduction away from me.
Exactly. Let me ask one more question. Do you know Mitch Joel?
He wrote. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a little mad at me for, you know, slamming on the 6 degrees thing when he's the 6 pixels guy.
Yeah. He's a pretty smart guy, though.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's a good buddy of mine. We actually met in the weirdest way. He just was playing around on YouTube and found a talk that I gave. And then he wrote about it. Somebody forwarded it to me. And then I emailed him. So it was a straight up 6 pixels type of thing. It was serendipity met by a referral.
That's so cool. So you were actually 1 pixel away.
Yeah.
He had to pixel bastard you, though, in order to get you to be motivated enough to reach back out, correct?
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, no, he's been a good friend for a while now. I went to the TED conference, and apparently as an attendee, not as like a big fancy speaker again, but when I went as an attendee, he was like my tour guide into this world.
Because oh, cool.
It was the first time I was there, but he was like, oh, I've been going for 20 years. I'll introduce you to all these people. He's a great guy.
Oh, that's so
he's
cool.
A very nice guy. I've been friends with him for a long time.
Your networking buddy, not just your tour guide.
Yeah, totally.
That's cool. So what were some of the things you did to actually research the science of networking? Because as you said, that is pretty rare. So what did you do and what did you uncover?
Yeah, so the first thing I did was I kind of gave myself a short course on all of these insights from the world of network science. So there are the people that study networks, some of the biggest names in this field are people like Brian Uzi, Nicholas Christakis and James Fowler, Duncan Watts, Stanley Milgram is the 6 degrees of separation study, although most people remember him for a little more controversial studies than that one. And I went back and the researchers that were still alive, I actually said, you know, this is a field that's 60 years old. What are the biggest insights into this field? What are the biggest, you know, things that researchers have discovered? 6 degrees of separation was one, as was the strength of weak ties, but there were a whole host of others. And so then I went, okay, I'm going to read every journal article about this. I went to grad school for organizational psychology. So I unfortunately know how to read one of those super boring studies no one reads. And I made it my mission to go, okay, but if I can pair this with like an interesting story from the business world, maybe I can teach people what's in this research study, but in a way that's actually kind of entertaining.
And how much of that was dependent upon your college professorship, where you're actually talking to students on an everyday basis and learning the science of communicating, not just the science of networking?
Oh, they are a wonderful test lab for that. You know, probably I owe probably 80% of my development as a speaker, especially to undergrad students who thought they were coming for a course in something or other. And then, of course, it's me practicing. Here's how to explain this phenomenon.
Right. None of the money, but 80% of the worth.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. So you did all this research. What are some of the most surprising things you discovered?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we touched a little bit about the 6 degrees of separation thing. The other one is this idea of strength of weak ties, that your most potent connections come from not your close contacts, who are usually connected to everybody you're already connected to. They're reading the same things as you. They come from your weak ties, or a very specific type of tie called a dormant tie, which is a person that you knew, but you haven't talked to in a while. Maybe you changed jobs, or they changed cities, or just something happened to where you've fallen out of favor. And we find that whether it comes to referrals to potential clients, advice on a new project, job hunting leads, et cetera, in almost every category, these dormant ties are a more potent source of feedback than are your close contacts. But we don't do that, right? When like we're going to talk about networking, we thought, okay, well, you talk to your close contacts and then you jump to one of those events where you're trying to meet strangers. most of us don't have to go to those events as often if we take the time to start reaching back to those people that used to be in our life and bring them back into it again.
So not necessarily falling out of favor, but certainly falling out of touch, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually it just happens accidentally, right? Somebody changes jobs, you lose their email address, they move cities and you don't see them as often. Those are the dormant ties.
So they're not Facebook contacts of yours or LinkedIn contacts of yours where you could get to them right away with their new job.
So sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. I don't really follow most of my Facebook contacts, right? You know, like there's probably 1,000 people that are actually connected to and only like 20 that I'm paying attention to on a regular basis. Yeah. But social media is a really good tool for keeping tabs on them. Because if they're in there, then that moves with those changes and you can kind of stalk is probably a strong word, but you can go look up, okay, what's going on in their life.
Friendly stalk.
Follow. There you go.
Yeah. We're going to be following you, by the way, from now on.
This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it. I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
So what are some of your personal strategies that you use to get back in touch with dormant ties?
So the social media tactic is one that I use often, which is when I know that I need to get back in touch with somebody, either because I've set a reminder to do it or they pop into my mind and I go, you know, it's been like 2 years since I talked to that person. Usually the first thing I do is jump on and see what's been updated in their life. The other thing that you can kind of do is often there, I don't know if you're like this, I know I always am. Often there's those people pop into your head and we think like, oh, I need to reconnect with them. And then here's the weirdest thing. We go, oh, I can't do that. It'll be so awkward. We haven't talked to each other in 2 years. But on the other hand, if you were to receive a message from someone that literally just said, hey, you know, I was watching this movie and it reminded me of you. I hope you're doing well. You would be thrilled, right? Yeah. So a lot of the tactic isn't, you know, here's some amazing tip or trick. It's getting over that feeling that because we haven't talked in a while, that we're going to feel awkward when we reach back out to them. That discomfort is actually kind of an illusion. It's really more about getting over that and then just sending them a message. And if you've got nothing new to talk about, everybody likes knowing that you were on their mind.
So get out of your own way, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
and sometimes get out of your own comfort zone.
Yeah.
Because you feel awkward about doing it. I think about people in my early sales teams and people that I sort of grew up in sales with when I was actually making sales, and I wonder what the hell happened to them. Mm. I don't reach out, but I wonder.
See, that's the thing, is getting into that habit. And you know, habit's actually, I think, a really important part of it. Most of us who've heard this strength of weak ties lesson at some point think, oh, great, so if I'm looking for a job or I need new clients, I'll go reach out to weak ties. It doesn't work as well then. People mm-hmm. can smell the desperation on you.
Yeah.
The point is to make it a habit. They pop into your mind and you think, man, what happened to them? And you take the 30 seconds to shoot off an email or look them up on social and see where they are. And then if you actually do need something or if they need something from you, it's just another in a series of conversations you all have every 6 months or so because you're making a point to check in regularly with those weak ties.
Or they blow their cover and they say, hey, and I know it's been a while since we talked and I was wondering how you were. And by the way, I'm now with New York Life Insurance.
Right.
So
exactly.
If you ever need any insurance,
if you want to sit down over coffee and talk about insurance,
bore the shit out of you with my slides.
Wait, do you bring the slides to the coffee?
Of course you do.
Horrible.
Yeah,
horrible.
Just in case, you know, you never know.
So do you have a system for doing this? Is it just like Johnny pops into your head or like, I don't know, 6 months from now, I might pop into your head so you'll reach out to me?
Or I already got you guys on a reminder timer. No,
that's what I'm saying. Like, do you have reminder timers? What can our diehards do?
Yeah. So there's a couple systems that I think work really well, right? So I'm a big fan of two programs in particular. One is called Contactually and one is called Levitate. I've used Contactually longer than Levitate. This is not a paid endorsement. I'm not like a, you know, a spokesperson for them or what have you. But what I like about both of them is you import your contacts in, and then they both lay kind of on top of your email server. So they're tracking who are you emailing or sending message back and forth. And you can set for every person, if I don't talk to them for 6 months, send me a reminder. So every morning at about 8 a.m., I get an email from actually both programs now. I probably should have staggered the send times that say, hey, you haven't talked to these people in this amount of time. The interesting thing, though, is if you start to adopt the kind of the habit of doing this regularly, I often get emails that say, you have zero tasks today because there's been no one you haven't talked to in the time period. But it's like a CRM for your personal life. And so I really enjoy that system a lot. But again, if you make it a regular habit, you may find the system's not worth it because it's just sending you a reminder to do nothing.
Do you send them a personal thing? Like, how are the kids? Are you still with Mary?
Yeah, so it varies. And this kind of leads into another really interesting insight from the world of network science, which is this phenomenon. It's a fancy SAT word called multiplexity, which basically deals with how well you know somebody, how many different facets and contexts that you know them in, affects how deep of a relationship that you build, but also how easy it is to reach back out. So if you only ever know each other because you used to work at the same company and work is all you ever had in common to talk about, it's going to be a lot harder to stay in touch with that person. It's going to be a lot harder to start the initial reach back conversation. But if you used to work together and you both played in a sports league and your kids went to the same elementary school, there's a bunch of different reasons they would pop in your mind, but also things that you can bring up. And what I like about any system like a Contactually or Levitate is the ability to capture that data. It's usually not in like a contacts card. You know, there's an open notes field, but you can't put stuff like, yeah, they have three kids and they're these ages and this one's a huge fan of Captain Lou Albano and all of that kind of stuff.
I love Captain Lou Albano.
I know.
Stop. I have his driver's license.
Our pre-show banter. Okay. Sorry about that. But that was a multiplex tie that you and I now made. I know I can email Jeff about wrestling.
In a heartbeat.
But wait, when do you enter that information in? Do you have an app? Do you do it right after you meet the person? How do you
stay up to date?
Walk us through
your
process.
So the nice thing about a system that lays on top of your email is that you can go back through those old emails, right? So I can find it even though I don't enter it by looking back through that stuff. Sometimes I enter it. Birthdays, kids, children's birthdays, things like that, I make sure to enter because those are important dates that you get. You kind of get bonus points for remembering,
yeah,
right? But you know, a lot of other random stuff. I'll actually spend some time scrolling through prior emails that we've sent, and or this is where again social media comes in handy because people share their whole selves, not just their work only self, right, in those mediums.
Is there a way that you have discovered the science of how they pop into your head in the first place?
Now we'd have to tie into a little bit of research that I dove into when I was writing The Myths of Creativity, which is my first book, on how sort of creativity works in general. It's kind of this weird combination of things. What we found is that a lot of the research that says this certain area of your brain is actually kind of off. It's more about networked regions of your brain. So you have, I'm going to get super nerdy here for a second. You essentially have two main types of brain cells. You have gray matter, which stores ideas, and then you have this thing called myelin or white matter.
Wait a minute.
Trust me, we're going somewhere.
I thought it was all gray.
No. One is the knowledge and one is the wiring, right?
Oh.
And it turns out that most of the time when you trace someone's thinking pattern, you actually see these weird random connections. This is why if you ever had to use the phrase like, I have to retrace my steps, right? And you go through and you realize that I thought about like five random things that shouldn't be connected. That's your brain's default mode working. And this is how people kind of pop into your brain. You see a movie or a television show that reminds you of them. You smell a smell that reminds you of the time you guys were out to lunch at that seafood. Well, I hope it's not seafood because it's probably a bad smell. Little things like that have to do with the structure of your brain, which is why it kind of pops in. So apologies for getting super nerdy, but it's a fascinating world, our brain, because it also runs on networks.
But doesn't one person also make you think of another? Don't you have like a stream of conscious that says, oh, Fred, wait a minute, not just Fred, what happened to, and then you start to think of all the people that were associates at that time.
Yeah, especially if you're somebody that you know on that sort of multiplex level, because you open them up to more possible connections. If Fred is just a former colleague, that's one chance. But if Fred was also in my bowling league, I don't bowl, but I feel like a guy named Fred would be in my bowling league if I did.
With his name on the shirt, for sure.
Right. Totally. Yeah. And like holy rollers on the back of the shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you have those multiple different contexts, you have more chances for that person to pop into your head because it's more places where your train of thought can go.
Wow.
Okay.
Is it train of thought or stream of conscious?
Yes.
Okay. Ooh, he just pulled a Jeffrey. Okay. Talk about taking the dormant tie to sail. Okay, so now I've overcome my personal whatever of getting in my own way of reaching out to someone. I reach out to them. I'm like, hey, what's going on? Was just thinking about you. And now how do
By the way, how's that wallet of yours?
Yeah. How do I move that if I'm a diehard into closed deal?
Yeah,
or so, referral.
Or at least a lead.
Or referral or whatever.
So that's where I was going to go is I don't actually think that if they're a weak tie or a dormant tie and you're re-engaging it for the first time in that first conversation, I don't think it's good to just go, oh yeah, by the way, how's your life insurance?
Do you have enough? Yeah, I agree.
Let me see your wallet.
Yeah,
I agree. What you should be doing if you feel like you've built the fancy term in this academic field is social capital, the value of the connections and the network, et cetera.
I like social capital.
That is a fancy term.
If you feel like you've built enough social capital with that person already, then the cheaper or less expensive question that can go very far is I like to ask a who do you know in blank question, right?
Uh-huh.
Which is an open-ended question that allows them to sort of opt into people they would know. So depending on what we do, right, who do you know in blank being this industry or this city because I'm moving to this city and I need to build a new book of business or what have you. But who do you know in blank because you then get a list of maybe two or three names. They're usually two or three names that they are comfortable introducing you to because if they weren't comfortable introducing you to them, they wouldn't have mentioned them. They would have just pretended they didn't know them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of us do this the opposite, by the way. Most of us like LinkedIn stalk somebody and then try and work backwards and then beg someone we mutually have in common for an introduction. And that person probably doesn't want to introduce you.
Yeah, I noticed that you're a number one connection with Bob Smith.
I hate that.
Can you possibly
Such
introduce
a pet
me? I go,
peeve.
Fucking no, I'm not going to introduce
right.
you. I
don't know, yeah, like you haven't even said hey to me. You just want to know if I can make an introduction?
Yeah.
Exactly. And we also don't know the strength of the relationship with you and Bob Smith, right?
Right. Yeah.
By the way, that has waned over the years.
Yeah, it's gone away.
You see less
of
that now.
Are you taking your shirt off or something? What's going on here?
I have my T-shirt on today. It's just Live in Wonder.
All right.
It's not Live in North Carolina.
For those of you who couldn't see the video, he was literally like unbuttoning his shirt.
Oh, that's going to make it on some clip somewhere for
so,
sure.
So do you enjoy being a college professor?
You know, I do. I really do. What's interesting is I don't actually enjoy the original research element anymore, like actually conducting the study where you're bringing 200 participants in and you're giving them the same surveys and doing interventions, that kind of stuff. I like staying in that world because I get to learn about cutting edge ideas. And then I like teaching particularly undergraduates because if you can explain something to an undergraduate, you know it. You've got it down pat and it takes a good kind of translator to do that. I know every time I go on stage at like a professional event to speak, I know I've got this because I just explained it to a 19-year-old, and that's way
cool.
harder.
That's way cool.
Yeah,
do you tell them that even though they're majoring in marine biology, that they're going to end up selling Xerox machines at graduation?
they probably do. And you know, I spent 6 years in the pharmaceutical sales industry, which is sales light kind of. It's more like lobbying than sales. But
yeah.
I did it right out of college before I went back to grad school, and I tell even the marine biology majors, like, you know what you should do if you can't figure out what you're going to do with your life, you should spend like a year or two in sales before you go transition into that. Because I mean, even if you just want to find the next job, that's a sales process, right?
Yeah.
And so you better learn this skill and at least develop it for 1 or 2 years. So
why don't they teach it at schools?
So there are a couple business schools that are starting to have this curriculum. There's in Georgia.
Yep.
I think it's in Georgia. Kennesaw State University has a fantastic program.
They use my book.
I think Ohio State has a sales Bible.
Well, that's why it's fantastic,
too.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, there's others. There's University of Central Florida. There is Baylor has one. And there is Ohio University has one.
There you go.
So they're starting to. And there's now Kennesaw kind of funds this national collegiate sales competition, which is getting other schools involved, et cetera. We're getting there. I think truthfully, business schools are run by academics and academics
really
down on sales, which
wait,
is ironic because I know shocking development, right? You get that's not actually true. It's like 80% academics, and then the 20% is retired executives who consider teaching their form of retirement, right? But they're usually not the ones that are willing to do the extra work of putting on a sales.
No, but they're the most fun guys because they have real world experience
and stories to boot. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like? Okay, so how long have you been doing teaching in school?
So I've been a full-time professor for the past 6 years. I'm actually technically not full-time. I'm on sort of a semi-permanent sabbatical because the writing and speaking and stuff has kept me so busy. I teach one class every semester on Monday and Wednesday afternoons, and then the rest of the time, I'm usually in an airport lounge somewhere waiting for a plane.
I got you.
That's
so
cool.
The people that graduated, let's say 3 or 4 years ago, how are they doing?
So the ones that I can stay in touch with, pretty good. The ones that I don't, they probably hate me, and that's why they're hiding from me.
You don't have a reminder timer on all of them?
Right.
Come on.
No, if I did my job right, they should be reaching back out to me, right?
Exactly. Well, exactly.
So they should be learning.
Of course.
You know, it's interesting. I think we're pretty much done with millennials in undergraduate education. We're now that next generation, iGen or Gen Z or whatever you want to call them.
Gen Z.
The thing I find interesting about the millennials is I think it took them a little longer to get punched in the face by reality, right? So instead of 1 or 2 years, it was maybe 3 or 4 years of bouncing around to find their thing and where they could contribute, et cetera. But the ones that are about three or four years out are largely doing well because, I mean, they did learn a ton of stuff. They just had to figure out how to make it useful. They had to figure out that, like, the CEO doesn't want to hear from you right away. Like, one of the things I encourage all of my students to do is, like, constantly cite your sources, because when you get hired, people are going to assume you know nothing. But if you can say, well, according to the sales Bible, we should do this. If you can cite your source, then they start to go, wow, this kid's actually pretty well read.
Tell that
and
to
eventually
a bunch of,
you earn that right.
Tell that to politicians.
No, that is a much longer rant.
Yeah, we're not going to go there.
But cite your source might be helpful.
So, okay, so this is so different than what most people teach about networking. I'm curious to know your views on whether salespeople should or should not attend networking events.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the goals. One of the most interesting findings in the book is that the traditional sort of unstructured networking event, the mixer, the meetups, et cetera, most of the time, even though people go there wanting to meet new people, they spend the majority of their time with people they already know or people who are really similar to them.
Mm-hmm.
So what we find
correct.
Is that when it's just those unstructured events, you end up, I mean, it's like an eighth grade dance. Everybody's standing in the corner, right? Stirring their Diet Coke and not knowing what to do. Or maybe if it's eighth grade, they're probably drinking regular Coke still, but you know, whatever. What we find in the research is that what one researcher called it, Brian Uzi called it shared activities, things that draw a diverse set of people together, but then focus them on something else. So that could be volunteering for a charity, like building a house with Habitat for Humanity or running a 5K, being part of a runners group or even just like an educational seminar where the point is to learn, where there's some other objective that requires interdependence. You end up building connections to strangers better because you have to meet them to do that thing, but it's not the awkwardness of that new conversation. The greatest networking event, in my opinion, I've ever seen, a guy named John Levy in New York plans these dinner parties where everybody who comes, they don't know each other yet. And when they get there, they find out that they're not just going to eat. They actually have to cook the dinner. So he's paired off and you get different tasks and you have to cook alongside a stranger. The rule, though, is that you can't use your name or what do you do during the cooking. Only after we sit down to eat dinner do we actually get to know what people do. So you have to build kind of a different connection. You can't just follow your script of here's who I am and what I do and why I'm amazing. You have to get to know the actual person first.
I love that.
Keith Ferrazzi, the guy who wrote Never Eat Alone, has dinner parties, but the table is only 18 inches in width. And so you can speak to four or five people rather than have to yell across the table or only meet the two people to the right and left of you. And then before dessert, he makes everyone switch.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I like that too. And Keith, you know, I remember this from reading the book, is very careful with who's on the guest list and all that kind of stuff to make sure there are those connections. But yeah, what I love about John's is the interesting thing is over the last 4 or 5 years, it moved from like a group of John's friends who didn't know each other to other people referring, oh, you've got to go to this dinner. And so now he's entertaining like Bill Nye, the Science Guy, and this Grammy award winning musician, and this lady who's the princess of a Scandinavian country. Like, it's the craziest list of people you've ever seen in a random apartment in New York. But it works just because people are not doing their normal little script of, here's my elevator pitch on who I am.
Yeah,
they didn't know the person first.
Here's my business card as opposed to here's my diamond ring.
It seems like, going back to what you said, they're building social capital.
Yeah, exactly. And they're doing it through that shared activity of having to cook. So
I love it.
I'm a huge fan of salespeople participating in shared activities. Those unstructured networking events, they're just not an effective use of your time most of the time.
Most people come to those events with an agenda. And the best thing you can do is go to meet people and be of some kind of value rather than try to suck blood and business cards out of a, you know, let someone give you their card rather than ask for the card.
Yeah, exactly. The way that I say it often is that I think there's a mindset shift that has to happen where we go to these events and we think, I'm going to grow my network, right? Which means the number of people I know. You can't grow your network. You can't build your network. You actually don't have a network. You exist inside of one already. Your best job is to figure out where you are in that network and how you can provide value and build social capital for that network. And down the road, good things will happen to you.
Cool. I concur.
I love that.
Yeah, I totally concur. You're actually a smart
guy.
This has
been awesome.
For a college professor, are you a doctor?
I am, but I don't normally go by that because my wife is like a real doctor. She works in the ER. She heals people, right? So I feel weird calling myself Dr. Berkus when she's the real doctor. We get into this fight with my kids all of the time because I'll remind them like, no, daddy's a doctor too. And they're like, yeah, but you're not a real doctor.
Exactly. You cringe when someone gets cut.
Oh, man.
I do.
Hey, where can people find out more information about you and get your books?
Yeah.
The best place is probably the show notes for this episode because they're already here and they're subscribed, et cetera. So they go there first. But if you also want to go to davidberkus.com, that's a good place to learn more about the books and what have you. But seriously, they want you to go on their show notes. They want you to leave a review in whatever app that you listen to. They're tired of asking you, so I'm asking for them.
Oh, best guest ever.
Yeah, no problem. Our producer's thanking the hell out of you.
For the record, David just built a ton of social capital with us.
Totally, yeah. He's in our social capital club.
Oh, man, I love it.
But I love, first of all, I love the phrase social capital.
Yeah.
I think that it goes beyond the word friendship because it talks about, is there value in the relationship to begin with? Because you can be friends with people and it's like nothing.
It goes beyond the word rapport, which is so commonly used in networking as well.
Right. Like I'm going to go to my 55th, I know this is going to be a surprise, high school reunion.
Oof, don't say it.
I know. There'll be like 50 people there. It's going to be in Cape May, New Jersey. I'm not going to give the address because I don't want random people showing up. But it's like, what's up? You know what I mean? Like, I haven't seen you in 42 years. How the hell are you doing?
So I'm going to introduce myself as, like, the girl who wasn't even born yet when they were in high school.
Yeah, you're going to introduce yourself as, I was born 30 years after you graduated. But I think that there are two kinds of networks. One is where you have an expectation, and the other is where you don't have an expectation. Like, I'm going, and I'm going to be happy to meet these people again or talk to them or find out what's new. I don't have an axe to grind. I literally have zero axe to grind, but I would like to connect or reconnect and just kind of reminisce about bullshit.
Yeah. Well, and that's – so two quick points. One, that's what I love also about this sort of social capital term is that it's not that kind of matcher tit-for-tat thing that we think about. I did you a favor, so you owe me one. It's saying I'm going to build value for the whole network. I'm going to show up with an open posture. Who can I help? Who can I build value and trust that the network will take care of me? I might end up needing help from somebody that I don't know all that well, but they see how generous I am with the rest of the network. And so they're willing to spend it. I don't think you do it from like a person-to-person accounting. You take care of the whole network. The other thing, one of my favorite, I just want to go on this rant. One of my favorite stories in the book, it's not a 50 fifth high school reunion, but it's the story of Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta, who started or really rebirthed the UFC. They actually, I didn't know this until I was researching the book, they met at a high school friend's wedding. So they were kind of acquaintances in high school.
Wow.
And then at a high school friend's wedding, they looked up, they saw each other, they bonded over that they liked mixed martial arts. A couple months later, Dana calls Lorenzo because he's, you know, inherited this casino fortune. He goes, hey, I think the UFC is for sale and I think that we should buy it. And they just sold it, what, 2 years ago for $4 billion?
Yeah.
Never would have happened had they not gone to that wedding. So there's good things that happen to you, too, when you show up with that open posture. But again, I think it has to do with taking care of the network, building social capital across the whole network, and then trust that that'll take care of you.
So if one of your friends, diehards, invites you to some bullshit wedding where you feel obligated to give them a dumbass gift because it's already on their, what do you call that thing, the registry, you know, please buy me a crock pot. You never know who you're going to meet. It could be a $4 billion deal.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Oh, man.
No, I mean,
for
Dana
cool.
in particular, they gave him 10% of the company. So he, when they sold it, made 10% of, you know, whatever it undisclosed figure. But, you know, you can do the math on 10% of $4 billion, all because he reconnected with Lorenzo. It's crazy.
That is
wow.
so cool.
I love that kind of
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
So
thank you for coming
thanks.
On our show.
Can
this
I come
awesome.
Talk at one of your classes?
Yeah, no, we'd love to have you. We should. I mean, if you want to, can you guys fly or is it still hurricane
We're coming
zone,
to Dallas.
No, we can fly.
Oh, come on.
We can fly.
Come on. This is not like tornado season with tumbleweeds coming across your lobby.
Yeah, that's true. Where I am, we have to worry about
you're
that.
You're not even in the suburb of Bumfuck. You can't even see Bumfuck from your place. But we're going to be in Dallas. I don't know what the date is, but somewhere in October.
Mm-hmm.
And we ain't that far from Tulsa. It's like a 4-hour drive or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe, yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I'll see what my schedule is. I would die to talk to some of your students. I think
no, we'd love it. What we probably want to do is put together like a special event so it's not just my class, it's a bunch of students. We could totally do that. If that doesn't work on your schedule, let me know the dates and I'll at least drive down to Dallas.
Oh,
I'm sure you already know how to eat an In-N-Out burger, but if you don't, I can show you around Dallas.
Oh, come on. We eat an In-N-Out burger in California. What I would take you to is
meet you.
Meet you.
Which sounds like a networking event, but it's a barbecue place.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. M-E-A-T, the letter U.
That's clever.
You're already there. Like I'm a professor. Do I get the professional discount? But I'll tell you, the barbecue is the best I've ever eaten.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. If you come up here, I'll take you to Burn Co. and we'll compare. I'll drive down there. We'll need to meet you first. I'll take you up to our Burn Co.
Can you fly from Dallas to Tulsa? Do they have airplane?
Oh yeah, it's direct. I start every time I travel to a speaking gig, I start with a quick 37-minute flight from Tulsa down to Dallas, and then I consider Dallas my home airport.
Oh, that's so funny.
Cool. Do you go to C6?
Where?
Dickie's Barbecue, Gate C6.
Oh yeah, I mean it's kind of chainy now. It's not.
Yeah, listen.
I'm a sucker for like the independent small batch barbecue, right? Craft barbecue, whatever you want to call it.
I got you. Don't discount Dickie's. They got pretty good brisket. Anyway,
you know, if you're in a hurry and you're not like there's nowhere else in the terminal you can go, it's not bad.
I'm always in a hurry when I land in Dallas and I'm switching planes. I go to Gate C6, no matter if my ass falls off. I get a bunch of barbecue. They call it a mess of barbecue. And I get in my plane. And then I eat it while people are walking in the plane just to piss them off.
The whole plane smells like barbecue.
Oh, yeah. The whole plane.
If you're in C, there's that. There's also, I think it's like C26 is the Chick-fil-A. There's now a Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A. Right. Charlie likes that. Our dog
and I would
really
much
likes
rather,
it
But
there.
I'd much rather be in Terminal A because that's where Twisted Root Burger Company is, and their stuff is fantastic.
Oh. Gotcha.
I know way too much about the Dallas Airport.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Me too. When I was banned on U.S. Airways, I had to fly on American before they merged, and I was in Dallas literally weekly. So I knew every gate, every place. But banned on U.S. Airways is a whole other story that would be in my Wikipedia page.
So I'm going to set a reminder timer for us to reconnect with you shortly.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'll get you a comp ticket to Dallas.
Yeah, we'll get that over
to the rest of you diehards, you're going to fucking pay for it. And so we can afford to bring David to our place. But it has really been a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been fantastic.
It's been
Thank
awesome.
You so much for having me on.
Thank
cool.
you. cool. I love that David brought new techniques and strategies that we can use when we're out there networking. And I hope he brought something that you may have never thought about before, like joining a class or doing something with other people. I think his exact words were something like, I was taking notes. I really like this. Things that draw people together, but then draw them to do something else. So some other connection that requires interdependence. And I'm thinking back to a lot of the times that I've been most successful networking. And, you know, if you know anything about me, you know I ran a major networking organization and event, weekly event in New York City a couple of years back. But some of my favorite networking activities outside of that have been playing tennis. Because when you go to group tennis classes, and I love tennis, when you go to group tennis classes, you meet people who just want to play tennis. And you end up talking about great shot, you know, where you grew up playing tennis, your background in tennis, and you have an automatic connection to build on. And I think that's key, is that automatic connection that you can immediately build rapport about, and then it lends to new and more interesting conversation. In fact, as an adult, it's hard to make new friends sometimes, especially like you're new to a city, you're trying to figure it out, or maybe you've been in that city for a long time and you have the friends that you've grown up with, but you want to venture out and meet new entrepreneurs, new business people, people who are more like-minded about business than just the friendships you've grown up with. And if you start thinking about what you're most passionate about and then taking classes or courses or workshops in those areas, you're automatically going to meet like-minded people.
So one thing that David did say that I did find kind of interesting was the whole mixer being like the eighth grade dance where no one really like talks to one another. So does that really actually happen in those meetings?
This is the voice of Nada. I love it. Thank you for chiming in, Nada. So, this is so interesting. I will go to networking meetings, and because there is the objective is to network rather than cook a meal or play tennis or do something else that's not networking, people freeze. It is so freaking crazy to me. I walk in the door and I see people talking to all the same people that they already know. Like even at the most recent Atlanta event, we start the event at 7:15 in the morning. Okay. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey doesn't go on until 8. Do you know what the 45 minute portion is called? Registration and open networking. Now, how long do you think it takes to register?
Probably 5 minutes tops.
Tops. Like, we have 5 people at the door welcoming you. So, like, if you even wait online, like, that's crazy, right? So, probably under a minute. That means you have 44 more minutes to network, and I'll see people talking to the people they came with or the people they know from their company. And I'll go over to groups of people and say, "Hi, welcome. I'm Jen." Introduce myself. And then I'll say, "Did you guys come together?" "Yep." "Oh, great. So you work together." "Yep." "So you already know each other." "Yep." "Okay, this is the open networking portion of the meeting, and we highly recommend during this time you take the time to meet someone you don't know."
Yeah, I mean, again, as someone that's been there for the Charlotte event, like, you see everybody together. You'd think they would, like, bond over coffee or something like that because it's that early in the morning, but they don't.
Or bond over Jeffrey.
True.
Okay. Like, well, which book of his was your favorite? Have you been to his other seminars? There's so many things you people can talk about in that 45 minutes to just break the ice. And I think because the pressure is there to network rather than complete a task, some people are really great at it. Jeffrey has a friend, Brandon, and he was at the last event. He's going to come on our show soon. Brandon Milch, he's amazing. And he was rocking that networking piece. He walked over to every single group, started conversations with them, found something to relate to with each group, and made new friends. And I guarantee he made contacts at that event for life.
Wow.
But that's because he made a conscious effort to do that. So you know, my friend a long time ago, I want to say like 10 years ago, which makes me feel old, opened a company in New York City called The Social Table. She no longer lives there and it's no longer around. But the concept, the entire concept of this was adults have a hard time making new friends, meeting new people, taking risks to talk to other adults. So we're all going to gather around this kitchen table in a commercial kitchen, and she's going to teach you how to cook. And what do you think happened when she taught people how to cook and she opened a bottle of wine?
Everybody started talking.
Everyone started having a fun time. And she paired you with someone you didn't know. So now you have a partner that you have to complete this task with, or you're not having dinner. And you're having a really fun time. So just think about, like, Sur La Table is in every city. They have cooking classes if you're into cooking. Think about what you're into and take David's advice and go out and do it and meet new people. So you know, sometimes I wait for Jeffrey to respond, and today he's not here. So I'm going to go on to the next portion of our show, which is, that's it. So that was, David was amazing, and I'm grateful he was able to come onto a show. If you haven't yet read his book, make sure you go get it. It's called Friend of a Friend, Understanding the Hidden Networks That Can Transform Your Life and Your Career. Now, this week, we have an amazing lineup. The Truthful Living podcast is on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we have Kathleen Hessert. She's going to talk to you about the next biggest thing, and it's not millennials.
Nope, Gen Z.
And then on Friday, we have Best Of. So, until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow. And I'll remind you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off. Sell or Die Hard. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.